Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the plans meeting tonight. There are a couple of things I would like to say at the start of this meeting. A, we only have one item to discuss tonight. The meeting is quorate and it is balanced. It is being recorded, but it also tonight is being live streamed. This is because we didn't want to have too many people in quite a small room. The meeting will also be recorded and the sound recording will be made available via the Council's website. Please also note that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulations 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings are then not under the Council's control. I'd also like to remind people that the emergency exits are to the side and the rear. We are not expecting any fire alarms tonight. The toilets are through the entrance on the side of the room. And also, could I ask everybody to either switch off their phones or turn them to silence? Thank you very much. Apologies. We don't really have any apologies. We've made the meeting quorate. So the only person that was going to be absent from this meeting was Councillor Bentley because he has a prejudicial interest in the application. The minutes of the previous meeting that were held on the 27th of February, can I have your confirmation that they are a correct record of the meeting, please? Thank you. That is unanimous. I've received no questions under Committee Procedure 12.8. Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest. Has anybody got anything to declare? No. Thank you very much. We then move on to the planning application, which commences on page 7 of your agenda. Now, the other thing I was going to suggest, and you will probably find it out, I have had confirmation from the committee that after the officer has given his presentation, it's quite a detailed, long presentation. We will have a 3 or 4 minute break for people to absorb what's been said. I would be grateful if none of you left the room, though, please, unless you absolutely have to. So with that, I will ask the officer to commence the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Apologies we didn't make it out on the site visit today, particularly with the slightly adventurous route we could have taken across the site. I've got some site photos anyway, which you'll see as we're going along. So this is the hybrid planning application for their Broadnock application, which is detailed in full on the screen in front of you. I have got a summary, which I've used before I'm on the briefings, actually. If I leave the previous slide up, while you're digesting that, if I can just spare a few words on the extras report. It might look like there's quite a lot there, and in many ways there is, and I have to apologise in advance. For whatever reason, some of the paragraph numbers on the conditions went a bit wappy in the final track changes. So from points 1 to 9, there are some amendments to some of the thresholds and some of the payments. You'll be pleased to know that all the payments go up and all the thresholds come down. On page 3, as titled here, is a list of the condition numbers as they should be. And then the bullet points that follow on from that, apart from 11, all relate to conditions that are referenced in the conditions, so condition numbers that are referenced in other conditions. And again, I do apologise for that. I'm not quite sure what happened there, but I'll take that one on the chin. So the thing to emphasise is this is a hybrid application, so part outline and part details. It's outline planning permission for up to 1,950 dwellings, up to 15 hectares of employment land, but there's also the local centre, the community resource centre, land reserved for travellers, primary school allotments, open space. As you say, there's a lot there. On some of the later slides, I will talk through the key differences between the parts that have the full, the parts that are in outline, and therefore how that then makes up the hybrid. Just to, as a few extracts from the core strategy, just to emphasise that this is an allocated site, and we are essentially dealing with the principle, but in many ways this is, with the allocation in the core strategy, this has also been addressed. I will come back to that as I work my way through the planning considerations, but it's just an early reminder of the fact that this is an allocated site. This is a good slide. It shows the application boundary in red. You will see Broadnook Spinney coming down across, diagonally across the site, and it slightly peters out as you get to this point. That will be enhanced, and this point here it's where the three parishes meet, will be where the three parishes park is. I'll refer to that a few times later on in the slide. This is the A6. The new access will come in here. This is the existing road that goes, Loughborough Road, that goes up to Rothley. This is the garden centre. The two extracts, then, if you like, are the two residential properties. When I come on to the section about impact on residential amenity, these will be the two properties that I'll be talking about in particular. Then you have the A6, A46 roundabout. Just a bit of context below. There's obviously Hallam Fields and the park and ride. But then there's the Cedars School here. Generally speaking, the land rises up from the A6 up to about there and slopes down from there in that direction and then slopes down the westerly direction. You've got the golf course to the north and the bridleway along the north-west boundary. You'll notice the field patterns here largely, which are retained, and in many ways form the development plots for the site itself. This is a view from the bottom corner. In fact, it's from down by the A6, A46 junction, so there's a view looking that way. And then I'll show you a view looking across from the site over here, and then a view from this side over the back of the Broadnook Spinney towards the golf course, which we would have gone on today. So that's the view looking from the A6, A46 roundabout. So all of the fields are laid to arable, or would be. This is just north up the A6 to the lay-by, just above the garden centre, above Bentley's garden centre. You can just see the A6 across the site there and the slip road to it from the garden centre and the lay-by. And these trees, it doesn't do them any justice here, actually, because it's a slight drop. But that's the top of Broadnook Spinney as it goes across the site. This is the other side of the site. So this is in close proximity to the golf course and the bridleway that runs adjacent to the golf course. And this will be the top section here is where part of the full application for residential dwellings will sit. The Barwards development, I'll talk about that later. This is, some of you may have seen this plan before at some of the technical briefing. It's a good plan because to me it delineates completely what's the full aspect of the hybrid and delineates the outline aspect. Those bits that are coloured are the full aspect of the hybrid application. Those bits that remain white, that sit within the red line, are the outline parts of the application. So just because this is a hybrid, parts of it are in full in detail, and they're the coloured parts, and parts of it are in outline. And hence there is quite a few conditions to reflect that. Just quickly running over that, hopefully you'll see it's quite an extensive band of green open space, recreational area, and then you've got the residential dwellings, the first phases of which are here, and they're formed into two plots. The central plot here, I'm just going to zoom into. This is the phase one master plan, so it is a requirement of policy or policy CS20, and it shows that's part of the Davidson's plot, that's part of the Barwood's plot, this is the Broadnock Centre, that is employment land, and then there's an extra swathe of housing that will come in here at a later date. I've zoomed in a bit on the plan. You'll hopefully be able to see the points of access. That's the A6, that's a new roundabout, that's another new roundabout. Again, I'll talk about those in a bit more detail in a minute. And then you've got the swathe of public open space, recreational area and sports provision. And at the centre of this is, well, in fact, highlighted in this with this red line, is something called Foxfield Park. You'll see you've got various sports provision here. You've got the cricket pitch, football pitches, increased planting and landscaping, incorporating sustainable urban drainage. On the other side of Broadnock Spinney, you've got the enhanced allotment. And you've got two buildings here, one of which is the pavilion. And you've got a gatehouse on the north side and a gatehouse on the south side. I'll talk about those in a bit more detail. As part of the full application, you have the points of access, which I've showed coming off of the A6. Then also you've got this link road which comes down to form the Northern Boulevard. That is part of the full application. So the initial 195 houses will have access along this up to when the first 300 dwellings are finished, actually. As part of the overall master plan on the previous slide, you'll have seen, let's flip back to it. So that's the Northern Boulevard, that's the central walk. You've got the Southern Boulevard further down, and on another slide I can show you where the existing footpath is that will be enhanced, that runs along the bottom southern edge of the site. So to flick back, that's Foxfield Park. And if you remember, I talked about the pavilion and the two gatehouses. That's the pavilion. So that's the grandstand and the steps with the change rooms behind it and various function suites behind that, which that glazed area and the steps clearly will look out onto the shared sports provision. That's the face that you'd see as you're coming in, small clock tower detail. So that very much follows the form of the design that we've been pushing for on this allocated site. It very much follows the garden suburb principles, which again I'll talk about later, but will come up a lot. It does come up a lot in the report. This will be one of the first developments to be built, and it will also be used as the administration and the sort of site headquarters, then, if you like, whilst the development is progressing. So it will be one of the first to be built. Framing that on the, if you can remember, just along just east of the pavilion, on the either side of the Northern Boulevard will be two gatehouses. So that's the view you'll see. That's just one of them. When you're coming along the Northern Boulevard, that's the side view. So, again, there's some very good detail in there. It's a bespoke design for this site, and very much following the garden suburb principles that are enshrined in policy CS20. So that was Foxfield Park, which we talked about briefly. As I say, they're the points of access and the road that would then go up to Rothley. This area outlined in red is the area that will form part of the Barwood Homes development. And I'm just going to quickly go through some of those designs for you. So these are some sketches of the designs, some of the enclosed spaces, the public spaces for Barwood Homes. So there are two developers for the 193 plots, and it's very likely that those two developers will develop the second halves of those respective sites as well. There's a selection of the house types, very much following the sort of the garden suburbs. You know, it's the details of the cross sections, the boarding on the eaves, the window details, eaves details, the corbelling, soldier crossing. There's some good quality detailing there, and it's fair to say the applicant and their team have worked hard and albeit pushed hard by the design review, but also borough councillors to achieve a good layout on both the development sites, good materials, good design, good integration of footpaths and cycleways, but more importantly, it's setting the standard for the developments that will follow on with the outline applications that will form part of the reserve matters. So that's a selection of the house types, by no means all, but it's a selection, and hopefully it shows the sort of the quality and style. This is, as I said, on the other side of the Broadneck Spinney. In fact, in that location, it's the enhanced Broadneck Spinney. You have the Davidson Homes. It's actually the top half of that. Where there's that queue on that oval park, that would form the central walk that will run through the site. As it shows, there's a layout of the site there. So you've got some bigger homes along the northern side, and there's sort of enclosed courtyards, public open space. Again, that's the northern boulevard, that's the central walk. So they are, generally speaking, bigger plots. The infrastructure has got the wider streets, tree-lined, again, very much following the push for good quality design and the garden suburb principles. So that's the layout for the Davidson's plot. These are some examples of the Davidson house types. If I just flick back to this courtyard, you see that long building I'm pointing to there is this one. It's, you know, to me, that's very much got sort of an almshouse appearance to it, and that's framed around that courtyard I just showed you with similar buildings, albeit there is a break so that the end buildings are detached, but that very much flows around that courtyard. There are similar features with some quality design around the crossroads, for example, and then the oval park as it wraps around here. The different sets of, well, there's three houses incorporated into those, which hopefully will be reflected in the later reserve matters submissions that come on the other side of the park. So that's the courtyard I was just talking about. So that's that's the almshouses. And that's the development on the other side. You can see it's essentially following the form of the sort of bigger building, but there's a break in there with the other property. Again, there's another graphic of that building, and then some more designs here. Another artist impression. Clearly, it's a corner site, but again, it's showing the wide streets, tree-lined streets, quality materials, the mix of materials and designs, but they do refer to each other, they do relate to each other, it's not out of context. Okay. You have to bear with me on this, as the chair warned. I'm going to quickly run through, hopefully quickly, these key planning considerations. They sit within the reports that you've got, so if you wanted to sort of follow as I go through, that's entirely up to you. I've talked about the principle of the development a few times now, but it does no harm to emphasise that. So policy CS1 defines the settlement hierarchy and the criteria for considering proposals within individual tiers of settlements. The development strategy set out in the policy seeks to guide development to locations that are well connected to jobs. In turn, policy CS1 cross-references the housing and employment aims of CS20. CS20, which I'm afraid we'll talk about a lot tonight, sets out a direction of growth for a sustainable urban extension, but unlike other SUEs in the core strategy, this policy is deliberately less prescriptive in terms of the site layout and requirements. A fundamental aim of the policy is the delivery of a garden suburb, which again I'll discuss later in one of the core principles. For the reasons given in the report, it is considered that the application is acceptable in principle and accords with the fundamental policies of CS1 and CS20. And just to repeat, this is an allocated site within the core strategy aiming to deliver a garden suburb, but there's a bit more freedom in terms of the design, and it's not as prescriptive as the other SUEs. Having said that, the garden suburb principles, as enshrined in CS20 itself, the 9 principles which are in your report, are key, very key to delivering a development which is acceptable in these matters. If I move on to highways, I'm aware this is quite a detailed drawing. There's a subsequent slide that follows that zooms in on this. But if I can just outline what's going on here, that's the A6, that's the A46, that's the A6, A46 roundabout. I've got another slide which zooms in on this and shows you the mitigation required on that roundabout. This, the two points of access, two roundabouts here, are the new access that would serve the development onto the A6, and I can talk you through the sequencing of that. And those of you that are familiar with the site, as you come up the A6 at the moment, there's a spur road that comes off here, Loughborough Road, which goes up to Rothley and in turn to the crossroads just in the middle of Rothley. Again, I will talk around that, but quite early on, that link road will be closed, and the new access coming in from Rothley will be come down here to that inner roundabout. So that will be the first roundabout to be built, and then this roundabout will be phased. It's no hiding the fact that that's going to be quite a logistical challenge to build that, but it's all been programmed, it's all been phased. The four lanes of the A6 have to be kept open whilst that phasing is done and the work has been done. We've seen that. I've got a series of slides which I can show you, which just show you the phasing of that. So it's built on one side, it's built on the other side, and it's connected through. As I said, so this is... as part of the mitigation required from the local highway authority, part of it was some improvements to Rothley Crossroads. So, as I described just, you have the A6 which comes up from... Well, you have the A6 and then Loughborough Road Junction which comes up here. That's the co-op there, I believe, and the crossroads. And there's on this side, on the west side of the crossroads, there's quite a big green embankment. What they're showing there is quite a substantial increase to the width of that to mitigate for the impact of the proposal. Actually doesn't impact on the existing pavement on there. Probably one of the reasons we've done it. If you can remember the Rothley Crossroads, that's just up here. There will be a new road, a spur road, a Rothley link road, if you like, which comes down, and this is the same road, to that inner roundabout. That will be the first road to be built into the site. So that will be the access into and out of the site at the very beginning. As the development progresses, the existing spur off the A6 to Rothley will be closed. Well, that will be the way in. But eventually there will be north access and south access off this roundabout. A few things to show here. You'll be aware there's an existing footpath that comes down, and you have to take your life into your own hand and get across the A6. That links into its footpath J100. I've got a slide on that in a minute. This will, over here you can see the enhanced pathway with crossings marked here. So they'll be proper, for a non-technical term, push button crossings, and here, cross, and then you'll come across the A6, and you've got additional footpaths which link into the existing public rights of way network. Also coming off here, and it will be shown on another slide in a minute, is an additional internal footpath which will go down to the A6, A46 roundabout. One further thing to point out on this slide is that's where the construction laydown area will be, the depot. Okay, if I take this section to the side, where I just was on the A6, this then comes down to the A6, A46 roundabout, which is the main picture. The internal footpath, as you can see on site, comes down. For those of you who know it, that's where that big telecom mast is. It will come in the back of there. But there's an existing pedestrian access which cuts across here. So the footpath will link into that and also into that. I'm sure you're familiar with this roundabout. It's quite a complicated roundabout. There's a lot going on. There are crossings on all of these junctions. You'll be aware of the sort of hotel fire station access road here. The pedestrian crossings on the west side all have the push button controls on the lights. On the east side, these that are marked red on the east side, they do not. As part of the mitigation required by Local Highways Authority and Highways England, those would need to be upgraded to push button controlled traffic signals. If I just zoom ahead, so the one on the left is just north of the A6, A46 roundabout. That shows the push button controls, the drop curb, the actual markings on the road itself. That's what you've got, the upper one, which the proposed footpath would link into. As in comparison, this is on the east side of the A6, A46 roundabout. There's drop curbs, but there's no marked crossing. And those traffic lights actually offer the traffic, not pedestrians. That crossing and the one on the other side of the A46 would be enhanced as part of the mitigation for this proposal. This is quite a busy slide, and I'll zoom into it at the next slide, but it shows the public rights-of-way network. There's quite a significant amount of improvements proposed by this proposal, but also within the site itself there'll be existing footpath network improvements and connectivity. As I say, if I just zoom in now, so the green and the J59 and J54 are the existing footpaths and bridleways. So we've got a footpath that runs along the bottom of the site, but that's it. There aren't any others that cross the site. The orange are the proposed footpaths that would interconnect across the site and the cycleways. The dashed line is the Sustrans route as existing, which will then swing round through the site to interconnect that north and south. So that's the Sustrans route. This is where the new access would go with the two roundabouts. And if you remember, I just showed you two little spurs that come off to join into this roundabout, which will be enhanced also. So just to sort of emphasise that fact, there will be improvements to the existing public rights of way network, but also quite a significant provision of interconnected footpaths and bridleways within the site itself, very much following the garden suburb principles. You know, it's very interconnected, so you could effectively live, work and play in the same area, potentially not even using a car, because that's the employment area, that's the residential area, that's the business centre, as I say, all interconnected. That's the first two bullet points. In terms of the quality and design of the development, so that relates to the vision, phasing, layout and the master plan, that's in detail in your report. But the proposed strategic development to north of Birstall is distinguished from other sustainable urban extensions within the core strategy by its ambitions and aims to be an exemplar development based on the garden suburb principles. The supporting text for policy CS20 at paragraph 9.43 of the core strategy sets out the key suburb principles in the context of both the vision and the policy of CS20. So the nine bullet points, I think they're in your report as well. It's considered the wide tree-lined boulevards, the public open spaces, the large interconnected sports and recreation areas wholly follow the key design principles of the garden suburb principles. The detail, materials, layout, mix of house types and mix of house sizes of the detailed housing plots reflect the design quality, or is considered reflect the design quality sought by the policy. The indicative master plan and the pre-application for the Broadneck Centre indicate that these important design requirements can be followed through for the remaining plots. On that one point, actually, there's been a detailed pre-application submission for the Broadneck Centre covering Broadneck Hall, the public open spaces, the care home assisted living, the primary school, and a detailed response done on that basis. It is considered that subject to the conditions, the design and overall appearance of the property would be more than acceptable. In terms of housing need, that's, again, it's in detail in your report, but the strategic housing needs of the borough seek to deliver nearly 14,000 homes by 2028 to balance the housing stock and meet the community's housing needs. Clearly, there's a fundamental aim and a fundamental requirement for this number of dwellings, and I'll cover it later as well, but there's also a need and a requirement for what is quite a considerable amount of employment land, 15 hectares of employment land. In terms of the tenure and the mix and the provision, one of the key questions we saw that will come up, and actually that's reflected in the report itself, is the amount of affordable housing. So a little bit of context around that. The development has undergone a detailed cost engineering exercise, which has resulted in a final list of planning obligations presented, which in turn have fed into the viability assessment undertaken by the applicant. Given the comprehensive review of the planning obligations basket, if you like, and the planning proposals, it's not considered that it's possible to make further reductions to the overall planning obligations. There are the recommendation A lists the heads of terms, and appended to the report is a more detailed, I must emphasise, draft planning obligations, which goes into a bit more detail. It's appended to the back of the report. The recommendation is based on recommendation A and B. So in other words, recommendation A is the obligations, recommendation B is the conditions. The appendix at the back is to inform that. A lot of work has been done on this, and the bits that are essential, the highways, education, for example, that seek to mitigate the impact of the development, are there and have been discussed in full and are appropriate and necessary. Any items that perhaps weren't essential have been removed, and what we're left with is the list in the recommendation A and a slightly more detailed list in Appendix 1. The affordable housing, I am afraid, is part of the movable subjects, movable aspect of this. It's gone through a series of viability assessments, which I'll touch on in a bit, but the CS3 and CS20 seek 30% affordable housing. Through the various iterations of the viability assessment, we're now at a situation where there is 16% affordable housing, but that's something that's being assessed independently by a viability consultant, but also it's something that we've discussed in full and at some length with our housing manager. It is considered that the development as a whole conforms with the highest standards set by the policy in relation to the garden suburb principles, and that's to do with the mix of dwellings, the tenure of the dwellings, and the layout. And the layout of the 193 detailed dwellings has a mix of dwelling sizes integrated into a wider housing network that accords with policy and would set the benchmark, as is considered, for future housing development in terms of design and layout. It's therefore considered that the development would meet the housing needs of the borough in terms of housing mix. The detail submitted is acceptable having regard to the principles of CS20 in particular and policies CS2 and CS3 of the core strategy. There are three little bullet points on this, so we're just halfway through this part. In terms of the provision of the employment land, as I said, policy CS20 states that up to 15 hectares of employment land will be provided. The preamble to this policy outlines the garden suburb principles, the sixth bullet point of which seeks a strong jobs offer with a mix of employment opportunities well related to homes. As I've said once already, it's to me, sort of garden suburb principles is an opportunity to live, work and play within the same area in an interconnected, and to me it makes it very sustainable. So you've got the employment strip of land to the east of the site, connected with the district centre and then the housing further off to the west. The hybrid application includes up to 15 hectares of land for use classes, but they are specified and controlled in the conditions. Just to re-emphasise what's in the report, So for B1 office use, we've got to up to 7,500 square metres. For B1 light industry, so B1C, is up to 17,500 square metres. For B2 general industry, up to 10,000 square metres. And B8 storage and distribution, up to 15,000 square metres. So there's a mix of uses. So this isn't going to be just an office development. It isn't going to be just B8 storage. It's going to be a proper mix of all of those. Further to that, the scale, design, landscaping, etc., it would be for further consideration on the reserved matters applications. And there's no reason why, there's no reason in principle why they wouldn't be acceptable. The detail obviously would be discussed when those applications come in, but because of where they are, they, in my opinion, they would need to be of good quality, but they'd also need to be of good quality to follow the design principles set out in Core Strategy CS20. So the location of the business element on the lower land abutting the dual carriageway with the backdrop of the community buildings in the Broadneck Centre is considered appropriate. The interconnecting footpaths on the residential part of the application are replicated and linked with that on the employment site. So overall, it's considered that the issues of concern raised by neighbours on this aspect of the proposals could be designed out at the reserved matters stage and that the proposals would accord with policies. And on that specific aspect, you remember when the red line boundary, which I can jump to at any point should you require it, had two circles, two indents, and that's the two points, the two residential properties that sit within the site. So there are two existing properties located adjacent to the A6, which are located outside of the application site boundary. Two main concerns expressed with regards to the impact of the development on the residential amenity of these properties from the residents. These concerns include the loss of their direct vehicle access onto the A6 and the proximity of the proposed commercial development. The access to the A6, so the current access that comes up through the Bentley Garden Centre and that lay-by, would be closed off, and that would be closed off early, but it wouldn't just be closed off on that, so you've got to fend for yourself. As I've described in the highway slides, there would be an access that leads to the inner roundabout, and in turn you've got that new link road which will go up to Rothley. So there will be, from early on, a point of access on and off the site, including for the existing residents that live in the bottom southeast corner of the site. It is considered the impact on residential amenity by reason of loss of light, privacy, overbearing impact, noise, disturbance, for example, can be mitigated at the detailed design stage. The employment area is in outline form, and as such, any future reserved matters application would need to consider the impact on the adjacent existing dwellings and ensure the design mitigates any significant and unacceptable impacts on the residential amenity of the existing properties and those to be built as part of the proposed development. As you are probably aware, the application has been in for quite some time now. I think it was originally submitted in August 2016. There was quite a comprehensive design review done in 2017. One of the criticisms of that design review was they were after more detail in relation to the stewardship. In fact, there were a number of requests that they put in, and that has been fully responded to on a number of levels. For example, it's reported in full, actually, in the report in front of you, but the design review in 2019 accepts the good work that has been done to improve some of the areas of design, in particular the interconnectivity of the footpaths and the cycleways, but in particular it also recognises the work done to in terms of stewardship. This is a slide here identified as Broadneck Trust. One of the applicants have done a lot of research into, well, Bournville, for example, you know, Cadbury, Saltaire, the proper sort of garden suburbs. And one of the key findings of those existing garden suburbs is the fact that there is this stewardship and it is maintained. The design standards are enshrined and kept as they are. In other words, it doesn't lose its way as time progresses. And this will be set up early on. And this slide, which is also in your report, is a reflection of that. There are essentially two key parts to it. There's the board of directors itself, which have the sort of legal function, legal control, if you like, and then the management committee, which have the everyday running of the site as a whole. And that's to do with the public open space, the recreational areas, the sports provision, because as you've seen from the first slide, there is a big swathe of public open space, recreation and sports along the northern swathe, but also zigzagging and interconnecting across the site. So it's important that it's maintained, and this is the vehicle by which that's done. So if I just do the Broadneck Community Interest Company, which is down there as CIC, that's what that means, the Community Interest Company, will be set up as an independent management company to ensure that the estate and green infrastructure assets are maintained and managed in perpetuity and to the best standards of garden suburb principles. The company would also manage, promote and staff the community facilities. The community facilities, there are a mix of them, one of which, that's the first building that we talked about, will be the pavilion. There's also the Broadnook Hall and the community hall, one or two other aspects as well, but there are quite significant public open areas that, as I say, interconnect east to west, but also interconnect north to south. So there is quite a big public open square and landscape area that links the Broadnook Centre to the pavilion, actually, and the gatehouses, and then in turn to the recreational area. The Broadnook Community Interest Company would have overarching responsibility for the roles and responsibilities of the company itself, but it would be run by a board of directors and would be constituted to include landowner and life trustees with key stakeholders. The Broadnook Estate Management Committee would have overall responsibility for everyday operation of the site with an overall manager. The committee were based in Broadnook Hall and would have a maintenance depot at the Foxville Park facilities. That's to the north, where the cricket pitch, the sports pitch and the pavilion are. The management committee would also manage the Broadnook Estate as a whole, Foxville, pavilion and park facilities, Broadnook Wear and Tear Fund, building and development covenants to safeguard the high quality environment, and that's on top of the restrictions on permitted development rights that sit within the conditions as suggested in the report. Property alteration, design guidance and administration and promotion of community cohesion. From my own personal experience, that's an important consideration for building a community, is getting the heart of that community up and running from an early stage, and that's part of the work of this Broadnook Trust. In terms of the landscape character of the site and the surrounding area, although the site falls within a direction of growth allocated within the adopted core strategy, there is no question that the development would change the landscape in the area. From the photos and hopefully from the plans that you've seen, the development plots, as I said already, largely follow the existing green infrastructure and retain, where possible, the existing hedgerows. So the fields are laid to arable, laid to crop. And as I say, a layout plan and plot shapes have evolved largely from the retention of the existing hedgerows. In terms of the impact on Rothley to the north, a key aspect would be to maintain the open aspect and silhouette of the village when seen from the south and views of the parish church and its tower. I would suggest with that wide strip of landscaping, public open space and recreation that runs along the northern strip, that successfully achieves that aim. As part of the conditions, the list of plans includes landscape plans, a comprehensive landscape and biodiversity management plan, and a detailed planting schedule. As such, it's concluded that any harm caused to the landscape of the site and the surrounding area can successfully be mitigated, and this mitigation can be secured by the use of both planning obligations and conditions that sit within the recommendation A and B in the report. So section 9 of the report is to do with ecology, green infrastructure and open space. The ecology chapter of the environmental statement is supported by a variety of survey reports covering habitats and a range of protected species. These reports were updated in the environmental statement addendum submitted in January 2019. A landscape and biodiversity management plan is included in the January 2019 update, and, as I said already, is listed in the recommended conditions at the end of this report to ensure compliance with policy CS13. The environmental statement that accompanies the application and the ecology chapters and the addendums to that from January 2019 are underpinned and informed by a comprehensive set of studies and surveys. The baseline studies, which actually sit in Chapter 8 of the environmental assessment, assess statutory and non-statutory sites and protected and notable species. The baseline study supplemented and updated the extensive assessment work carried out on the surrounding area on behalf of the Borough Council in advancing and selecting its strategic priorities, one of which, of course, is the North of Birstall, in the core strategy. So there's a significant amount of ecology, landscape, environmental work that was done as part of the allocation itself, which in turn was examined in public as part of the core strategy adoption. The findings and analysis is recorded in the Environmental Statement Addendum Chapter 8. It concludes the scheme will have no significant adverse residual impacts on the ecological features present with its zone of influence, and bats are predicted to have a significant long-term benefit once the new green infrastructure habitats have established and matured, and a biodiversity offsetting exercise has also been completed, which shows that the scheme can deliver a gain in biodiversity when complete. So overall, and for the reasons given, the ecological impact has been fully assessed, and with the mitigation planning conditions, it is suggested that it satisfies the requirements of policy CS13. An important part of what I just talked about is making sure then that there is long-term management of the green infrastructure and the open space. Policy CS12 states that we will protect our green infrastructure assets for their community, economic and environmental values. And CS20 itself has a set of specific environmental aims which are listed in the report on page 65. The plan extract I just showed previously and is it that sits in your report shows the development plots and northern green strip. The plan also shows the enhancements to Broadnock Spinney and its extension from its southern corner across the site to the central park. The whole site is laid with interconnected footpaths. Yeah, the plan is on page 66. There's a detailed suite of landscaping drawings were submitted with the updated submission in January 2019 and provide the necessary detail and can be secured by, and are secured by condition. With the green infrastructure parameter plan and the associated landscaping plans, the proposal is considered to conform with policies CS 12, 13 and 20 in this regard. So overall, in the assessment of ecology, green infrastructure and open space, for the reasons given above and in the report, this proposal is considered acceptable in accordance with the policy. The slightly shorter sections now. In terms of the flood risk and drainage, I can confirm that the application site lies entirely with flood zone 1. The lead local flood authority have reviewed the updated submission and confirmed that the application is acceptable in their view, subject to the inclusion of planning conditions, which have been done so. Severn Trent responded to and raised no objections, again subject to conditions. The comments of the lead local flood authority, the Environment Agency and Severn Trent are noted and their conditions attached to the recommendation B.
It is considered that the application has satisfactorily demonstrated how the surface water within the development will adequately be managed, and that there will be no net increase in the rate of surface water runoff for the greenfield site. Furthermore, it is considered that the foul sewage can appropriately be secured by planning conditions. Overall, in relation to the flood risk and drainage, it is considered there be no sustainable reasons, subject to appropriate conditions, why the element of the proposal subject to full planning permission could not be delivered in an acceptable manner, and that the elements of the proposal subject to the outline permission could be brought forward at a reserved matter stage in a way which would accord with the requirements of policy. In relation to the effects of the loss of the agricultural resources, including best and most versatile agricultural land, the application site comprises 204 hectares, mainly used for arable crops, with a network of mature hedgerows and a linear copse of trees that run from the north of the site at an angle to the centre of the site, Broadneck Spinney. The survey submitted with the application in relation to the agricultural land confirms that there is no grade one land, with approximately 10% of the application site being classed as grade 2, 5% grade 3A, and 85% grade 3B. The remaining land is woodland or hard standings. The site is predominantly covered by heavy clay soil, which is graded as 3B, with only 15% of the land denoted as best and most versatile. Therefore, the development of these fields was a consideration in the allocation of the site for the North of Birstall direction of growth in the core strategy, which in turn assessed the site under the overarching sustainability assessment. It is considered that the proposal accords with the aims of the policies in this regard. In terms of heritage and built heritage, there are no listed buildings or conservation areas within or adjacent to the application site, and as such, there are no direct impacts on any buildings or any designated heritage assets. It is considered that the proposed development will cause less than substantial harm to the significance of any designated archaeological and heritage assets and their setting. And given the public benefits weighed against this proposal, it's considered, given the aims and objectives, that it would accord with the policies and National Planning Policy Framework. In terms of the impacts on the proposed local centre on the town centres, policy CS9 seeks the threshold for sale town centre uses in outer centre locations, set to actually at 500 square metres. Policy CS20 seeks to provide a new integrated development, as I've said, which needs to include a selection of services at its centre to make it truly sustainable, to serve the new development and to ensure the proposal is both sustainable and satisfying the garden suburb principles. As the site is not previously developed and outside the town centre, it's a slight nuance of the policy framework that a retail assessment and impact assessment needs to be undertaken. However, both of these have been submitted with the application, which conclude that the development would not impact economically on the surrounding area and that there are no sequentially better sites. However, as the town centre uses have not been fully addressed at its It proposed that the town centre uses in the Broadneck Centre have a further assessment prior to the submission of the reserve matters application, which sits in the conditions. In terms of the impacts on the geological and mineral resources, the County Council, as the Mineral Planning Authority, has reviewed the assessment submitted and raised no objection to the proposed development in respect of mineral safeguarding. Therefore, overall, an assessment of the geological and mineral resources, the proposals are considered acceptable in accordance with core strategies policies CS 16 and 20, but also policies M11 and 12 of the Minerals and Waste Local Plan. As I said, recommendation A has the heads of terms for the draft 106, and the appendix has a bit more detail of the draft legal agreement. I remind members of paragraph 56 of the National Planning Policy Framework, which in turn relates to paragraph 122 of the Community Infrastructure Levy Regulations, which states that planning obligations must only be sought where they meet all of the following tests. Firstly, A, necessary to make the development acceptable in planning terms.
B, directly related to the development, and C, fairly and reasonably related in scale and kind to the development. The suite of planning obligations have been thoroughly tested against those three tests, those three requirements. It's considered the heads of terms and draft planning obligations in the Appendix 1 are still compliant, as they satisfy the three tests in the legislation. In terms of the viability assessment, this was undertaken by the applicant in August 2018 and reviewed on behalf of the Borough Council by an independent expert in November 2018. In the same year, 2018, a value engineering exercise was undertaken to review all the planning obligations and to drive down the costs. The development as proposed is the result of extensive discussions with a wide number of agencies, and the resultant officer recommendation is only possible on conclusion of these detailed discussions. The opportunities to refine the proposed development and the associated planning obligations have been fully explored by officers. The obligations as proposed mitigate for the development and accord with the tests in the National Planning Policy Framework and Community Infrastructure Levy, as I've just mentioned. The provision of affordable housing is an aspiration that has to be measured in assessing the overall mitigation of the development impacts. As such, there is no scope to refine the obligations, and the report is put to members on the basis of that detailed in the report and the recommendations A and B. Policy CS20, and it's not unique, the other sustainable urban extensions in the borough have the same requirement, seeks a site for at least 4 show people in accordance with policy CS5. Overall, it's considered in this aspect that there be no reason, subject to appropriate planning conditions, why a development could not be brought forward at the reserve matter stage that would accord with these requirements and aims. This is just a very quick summary of the Section 106 obligations. As I say, there's a more detailed heads of terms in Recommendation A, and then a more detailed draft that sits in Appendix 1, but that's the key Section 106 obligations. So in conclusion, and having carefully considered the application submission, consultation responses, the views of neighbours and nearby residents, it is considered that the proposals accord with planning policy, having taken into account the relevant policies of the development plan, which are listed in front of you, the core strategy and SAVE policies of the local plan, and material considerations including the aims and objectives of the National Policy Planning Framework, associated guidance, and then the Planning and Listed Buildings and Conservation Act 1990. Subject to the extras report and nothing further to add, that should be there. So subject to the extras report, the officer recommendation contained in recommendation A and B stands. Nothing further to add at this moment, Chair.
And then have a short break.
Chair, I actually recommend that we move on to the speakers because it's just been the theme in depth.
Yes. So we'll move on to the speakers. We have two tonight. We have Mr. Steve Lewis Roberts on behalf of the developer, followed by Mr. Hartshorn from Roseley Parish Council. So, Mr. Lewis Roberts, if you'd like to come and take a seat at the front. Mr. Roberts, could you move into the centre, please, because No.
Oh, no, he was asked to sit there. I told him
to sit there. Oh, you told him he could sit there. That's all right then. Now, we have, just to explain, and for Mr. Hartshorn as well, we have a traffic light system here. You have 5 minutes to speak. When the lights are green, carry on. When it goes to amber, you have 1 minute left. And when it goes to red, you stop. Even if you're in mid-flow, I'm afraid. I won't interrupt you when it goes to amber, but you will hear, and that means you've got 1 minute left. If you'd just like to press the button when you're ready to start, Mr. Lewis Roberts.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this planning application. When the Borough Council identified the Broadnock location as a strategic priority in the core strategy, it did so in the knowledge that this was an opportunity to deliver a flagship scheme based on garden suburb principles. The Council's vision emphasises Charnwood's heritage of locally distinctive garden suburb housing associated with the Great Central Railway at Rothley, Quorn and Birstall. And the principles for Broadnook include generous green spaces linked to the wider countryside, strong vision, community engagement and long-term stewardship of assets, a full range of jobs and homes within walkable neighbourhoods which has an identifiable architectural style, and an attractive and integrated local centre. The applicant team has worked extensively with your officers to refine the proposals in order to meet the Council's vision. Unusually, the scheme before you is a hybrid planning application, which includes comprehensive details of the primary access infrastructure, details of the first two phases of residential development, and significant details of green spaces and parks. Whilst this approach has resulted in significant upfront work, the benefit of front-loading is that the scheme can be implemented quickly. Delivery on this site makes an important contribution to the 5-year housing supply. Furthermore, members can have confidence that the design quality provided in this application will be delivered. I should emphasise that our developer partners, Davidson Homes and Barwood Homes, have designed bespoke house types which reflect the Charnwood vernacular and will set the standard for high-quality development on the site. Overall, a broad mix of housing, including assisted living, retirement, accommodation and bungalows, will be provided. The applicant is committed to the early delivery of well-designed community facilities to provide a focus of civic pride. A new primary school will be built together with local shops, health provision and community facilities within the Broadnook Centre, which will be the focal point for the new community. The detailed design of these buildings is at an advanced stage and have been incorporated into a Broadnook Centre planning brief, which has been endorsed by your officers. Following the grant of planning permission, we will immediately submit the details of the Broadnook Centre to facilitate early delivery. To create a long-term sustainable community, the community assets and public realm will be managed by a stewardship body, the Broadnook Trust. This model is based on the highly regarded Bourneville Village Trust and will provide excellent estate management services, promote community development and safeguard the high-quality environment. The applicant has agreed a substantial Section 106 package to effectively mitigate the impact of the development on local infrastructure. The total cost will exceed £30 million. The three headline topics are transport, education and health. And it's relevant to note that since the core strategy examination in 2015, the cost for these three important infrastructure requirements has risen by more than £17 million, or 143%. Notwithstanding these increased costs, the development is still able to deliver a minimum of 319 affordable dwellings. Most of the affordable family properties and half will be social rented dwellings as recommended by the Housing Strategy Manager. The affordable housing table on page 54 of the report shows that 410 dwellings, or 21%, could be delivered using a different tenure mix. In summary, the proposals for the Broadnook Garden Village will be delivered through a comprehensively planned development which will achieve the highest standards of design. This hybrid planning application accords with policy CS20. The design quality has been independently assessed at various stages of design review by a nationally recognised organisation. The review concludes that Broadnook Garden Village will raise the bar for development beyond the administrative boundaries of Charnwood, and the proposals are commended to the Council. The officers have provided a comprehensive report which addresses in detail all the material considerations.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Thank you very much. Mr. Hartshorn, if you'd like to take the same seat. And you understand the... Okay, thank you.
I'm speaking on behalf of Rothley Parish Council. Members will be aware of our comments as outlined in the officer's report. We are aware that the County Council Highways Department have agreed to accept the amended highways plan subject to firm conditions. We still have serious reservations about the capacity of the A46-A6 junction being able to cope with the additional vehicle movements. This winter, with the serious flooding in the Soar Valley, there's been extra traffic using this junction, and this has caused serious delays at peak times. We are also concerned about the single entry to the site. We don't think this is adequate for the amount of traffic predicted. This will need to cope with all the traffic to the new settlement and all traffic entering Rothley from the south. We note changes will be carried out at All Fields Lane and Cossington Lane Junction, and this must be complete before the occupation of the first house. In the initial consultation, there was provision of a detailed medical facility. We note that this is now included in the community building and will not be provided until the occupation of 650 houses. This will create serious problems for the existing medical facilities in Birstall. Where will the primary school children be educated from the first phase of houses? The school is not proposed until the occupation of 300 houses. All local primary schools are already over capacity. We requested Section 106 for our community facilities because they will be stretched before the facilities are built on this site. As Rothley Village is likely to be the village most affected by Phase 1 of this development, we fear existing Rothley community facilities, which are already under tremendous stress, will be put under further stress. Yet there are no Section 106 monies to mitigate this problem. We note the Library 106 money is allocated to Birstall and Syston. Rothley Community Library needs Section 106 money, as this is the nearest library to the site. We need assurances that the settlement separation between this site and the limits of development of Rothley are maintained and protected. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hartshorn. Would you like to come back on the comments by the speakers, Mr. Gould, or...
Jackson? Yeah. Feel free to remind me if I've perhaps not got some of your comments correct. I think there are about 10 key questions relating to the A6, A46 junction, the single entry, single highways entry to the site, the crossroads at Rothley, the medical facilities and the provision, primary educated children, and the how the existing primary network will cope. Section 106 and the community facilities and the settlement separation. Is that right? If that's right, I'll deal with those in that order. In relation to the highways provision, and I'm just trying to remember quite what way the plan is, it's no exaggeration to say a huge amount of work has been done by a number of agencies, by the local highway authority, by Highways Ingham, by the applicant and the agent, but also by the borough council, by previous officers and officers at the council. I will look to you on this one, but you mentioned one point of access to the site. There isn't. That would be one of the original roads that would have to be provided coming into the site. That would be the original point of access. But then you'll have this purpose-built double roundabout onto the A6, which can take you north and south. So you have a choice. You can either go up that to north or south, or link up to Rothley itself on what will be the new Loughborough Road. But that, as the development starts, that will be the first point of access in, but there won't be a single point of access as the development progresses. In terms of the crossroads, are you absolutely right? That has to be implemented from the very beginning, building on the reasons I've just said, because that new spur that's going to come down will be just off to the, as you're probably aware, just off to the west of that junction, which is why those improvements need to be made from the early stages. The medical facility, that is one of the elements that sits within the outline part of this hybrid. So that would be that would sit within a reserve matters application for one of the elements, or combined elements that will sit within the Broadnook Centre. But as the agents just described, and as far as we're aware, those applications will come on quite early. Once the application has made, there's been a formal decision made on that. If the layout of the Broadnook Hall follows on from the pre-application advice that we've seen as borough councillors, then the medical facility would be an integral part of that development. From memory, I think it's sort of 2.5, 3-storey Broadnook Hall. It would sit on the ground floor. Now, you'll have noticed in the 106 and the heads of terms in Appendix 1, there is an either-or option. So the CCG, and I'm going to forget what this is now, the Clinical Commissioning Group, have sent in quite a detailed letter of representation with concerns expressed, firstly, about being able to provide the provision on site, and secondly, their preference for that monies, and it's quite a substantial amount of money, just over £1 million, to then seek for upgrade of the two local surgeries. The preference of the Borough Council, and this follows on from the CS20 policy itself, is that that medical provision is provided on site within Broadnook Hall as identified. We understand where the CCG are coming from in terms of the actually facilitating that, but that provision as drafted sits within the, as I say, the draft 106. So the preference is for it to be built on site, but if not on site, then it will seek to be upgraded to the two local surgeries. In terms of primary education, yes, you raise a good point. And again, as well as highways, there have been significant discussions over a period of time directly relating to this. We, as officers, are aware of the demand on places, particularly at Rothley Primary School. There's a balance to be had in providing a new school when you haven't got the development associated with that. So there's approximately 2,000 houses with this development. You can't provide a primary school that mitigates for that immediately, because then it will be used by other villages coming into it. So it's got to be managed properly, and that's what was proposed in terms of the phasing. And that's come from the local education authority that sits. It also sits within the Section 106 as drafted. So you're absolutely right. The first phase of the primary education would be at the threshold would be the before occupation of 300 dwellings. But that's also the same threshold for the provision of the access onto the A6. So it's in my experience, that's quite early on, actually, to have that provision there. But there are contingency plans for the occupants of those first 300 to be able to provide them with primary education, either within some of the community facilities, such as Broadnut Hall or the Foxfield Pavilion, up to the point of 300. From then on, which it will be done in phases. It's essentially three phases, so it'll be the thresholds of which sit within heads of terms and the 106. If I deal with your last point and then come back to the community facilities, I completely understand where you're coming from in terms of the making sure that the separation between this new community and Rothley stays there. And the way I would answer that is, as you've seen from the plans, there is a big swathe of recreational area, public open space and sports provision across the northern swathe. And that's a key requirement of policy CS20. For the development to proceed without that wouldn't be acceptable in planning policy terms. There is no point in providing, and that is detailed also in the full part of this hybrid, so that will come along early. And there's no point in going to all that expense and cost and time for it then not to be there. So that will be, the developers would have to build in accordance with the approved plans. That is one of the approved plans. And in the landscape chapter, it's a specific reason why that swathe of landscaping is there, is to retain those open views. And from memory, I was talking about the glimpses you get of the parish church, etc. I think with that swathe as described, you would still get that, and it would still be protected by the conditions and obligations as is. You mentioned community facilities. This is an awkward one. As I detailed in quite some length, just in terms of the Section 106 obligations, it has to pass those three tests. Everything that's put in front of you in terms of the suite of planning obligations has passed that test. And whilst we've seen obviously the comments from yourselves from the Rothley Parish Council, I'm aware that there is a somewhat of a choice in terms of library provision, for example. Within the Broadnut Hall, there would be a dedicated library provision. As part of the proposal, in fact, in part of the public open space and northern strip, there will be upgrades to the footpath from Rothley down, which in turn would link into the Broadnut development. I mean, you don't have to go through the Broadnut development. You can go across the A6 and follow the footpath J100, which will also be improved. So I would say there will be links to this new community from Rothley, and there will be benefits to the residents of Rothley, but using the community facilities on site itself, not necessarily directly related to Rothley. If I may, just one extra point. The core strategy, policy CS20 in the core strategy, as I said, is a direction of growth, so it is a sustainable urban extension, and it aims to achieve 1,500 dwellings and 15 hectares of employment lands. You will be aware that this is an increase from 1,500 to 1,950. That, I believe, is counted in the report, but I need to make you aware of that. And there are a few reasons for that. The application, as I've said, was originally submitted in 2016. There were key concerns from borough council officers about the deliverability of that scheme. As an aside, there was also key concerns from the local highways authority to address those concerns, and there was a technical briefing, if members recall, in December 2018 to update members on the changes required to make that scheme viable. So it's as a, it's relating to concerns of deliverability and connected to that viability that you've seen an increase from the indication in policy series 20 of 1500 to what is now before you of 1950. Hopefully that answers your questions.
Thank you very much. Now, I know a number of people will want to talk. Are you quite happy to carry on with the meeting, or would you prefer a short break? We carry on. I think this is something that's come before us many times. We've had briefings, and I think we can thank the officers and the speakers tonight for giving a very thorough briefing on it. At the moment, I have two speakers. So, Councillor Tassel, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I've got three queries that I'd like to put forward to the officers. The affordable houses, how many are going to be 4- and 5-bedroom houses? Which is something that is desperately needed for rent. That is one of them. The second thing is, one of my favourites is the children's play areas. Now, you have stated that they are in different areas of the site. Are they all surrounded by houses? Are any of them near footpaths? And are they all going to be safe? That's the other one. Also, you're talking on page 53 about the travellers' sites. Now, you say show people. Now, are you talking about show people or are you talking about travellers? Because there's a big difference between the two. The travellers the fair people have quite a lot of equipment, like fairground equipment. Is there going to be facilities there for them to store that? So you're differentiating between traveller and show person. So can you clarify it for me, please?
Thank you, Councillor. I'll deal with them in reverse order, if that's okay. Just to confirm that, yes, this is for travelling show people. It's a specific requirement of policy CS20. And although it's part of the outline part and it's indicatively shown in this southeast corner, but yes, I confirm it would be four plots for travelling show people. In terms of the children's play area, I would suggest that the site is well served. I've already talked in quite some length about the public open space, the recreation and sports provision and the swathe of landscaping across the north. Hopefully this plan in front of you shows you the interconnected sites. There was a previous slide which showed the new footpaths on site. If you can just make out these red circles, which they are the leaps, so they are the children's provisions in here. So it's the centres of the circles where they're provided. So they're a mix. They are interconnected. They are near housing. This is reflected in the report, but there's a slight gap here where there's not crosswire circles, but I would suggest that is in close provision to the recreational and sports and landscaping provision around there anyway. And how many 4 and 5 bed? I might... Yeah, in terms of the affordable housing mix, that's on page 54 and 55.
Thank you. Councillor Ranson.
Good evening, Chair. Thank you for letting me speak. I wish to commend the officers on this report as well, because it's quite an in-depth report that has to be compiled, and also the speakers. I've got three questions, Chair, if that's permissible. One is actually, you know, the green spaces that you've laid out, can we actually have some covenant, and you're going to love me here, on these green spaces so that it can't be developed into housing? Because sometimes that does happen if it's not, you know, sometimes you have perimeter green spaces and all the rest, you know, so you can put a covenant, I assume, on it that they can't, they have got to remain as green spaces. That's my first query. Okay. The second one is the social housing or affordable housing. Are they going to be mixed, integrated within the ordinary building houses, you know, that, so that they're not left, sometimes they put them on perimeters, which is not really, doesn't stand fast, like flats and that, that doesn't actually stay fast. And the other item is that Broadnook Trust, this is going to be, it was mentioned by one of the speakers that there's going to be a board of trustees. I know, is that just going to be compiled by the actual builders, or are the community going to be invited to be on this board so that the residents, particularly the village residents that surrounding, may actually have? I know it's far advanced, but it may quash all the actual queries that some of the villagers have. And the other thing is, I'm quite pleased on page 93, 26 and 27, because of the floods that have been, you've addressed that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. So, taking up your first point then, you were talking about a covenant for not developing the green spaces. Unfortunately, that wouldn't fall within the remit of the Plans Committee or the planning legislation to do that. That said, as I said, I think in response to the speaker from Rethley Parish Council, that swathe of green open space, public recreational space along the north and the interconnected green spaces, footpaths and cycleways, are essential. They are a key part of the garden suburb principles. The list of plans that sit within the conditions they would have to conform with, I'll spin it another way. If they were to come in with an application with housing development on that green space or any of the other green spaces that are left, would it gain a favourable recommendation? Very, very unlikely. So what you see in front of you, there's been a lot of work to design up this layout, if you like, to incorporate the green spaces. And as I said many times, that's a key component of the principles and of the garden suburb principles that are set out in the beginning of CS20. And then there was social housing. Yes, is a short answer. So the hybrid part of this, the full application for the first 193 houses doesn't have any affordable housing within it. That would be spread out proportionally amongst the rest of the site. And I think the phrase I've used before is pepper potted. So it's scattered around and incorporated in. And in my view, in my professional opinion, that's what makes it work. And that's a key requirement. And then finally, you talked about the Broadnook Trust. Would that be whether you builders, you know, developers on there, or would it be residents? I think it's page 59 as a table to do with the stewardship of that. So you have the board of trustees and then the management committee, and then there are various bits that link into that. So the short answer is both would be involved, but it's a key component for this site to work. Is that community cohesion? So the residents, yes, clearly would be involved in part of that. The parish council is linked on the same drawing as well, I believe.
Just to bring members' attention to the extras page, which is condition 11, which highlights the need under condition 16. For a site-wide affordable housing strategy. So we're expecting that strategy to come forward, and that will pick up the point around the phase-in, and that's before commencement of development. So we will have that before that. And then the other point in relation to the structure of the trusts, the detail of that is still to be agreed, and that will be agreed through the Section 106 process. And we're very keen that there will be community representation and council representation on that trust, as we are with the other trusts that we're negotiating with on the other SUEs. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. A lot of my queries have been answered, so I mean, I haven't had any queries to add. Just to comment that we have had a very thorough briefing tonight, and other thorough briefings as well, not just tonight. And on the face of it appears to sort of, the development does appear to meet the garden suburb, which I think is important, which I think is something we've always wanted here, the quality of design in terms of the layout, and also the house types as well is of a high quality. So I'm fairly happy with what we've got tonight. So I'd like to propose officer's recommendation.
Thank you very much. Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'd like to echo commend the officer's report. Really, it is very detailed, and thank you very much for explaining it in such detail to us this evening. Just a couple of questions, if I may. The trust that's being set up, and just for clarification, now, will the trust also look after all the highways, or is the highways being adopted within the site? So that's one question. Will all the reserve matters applications come before this committee subsequently? Second question. I have to say I am nervous about the Section 106 part with regards to medical provision, with the possibility of it not happening on site. I do like the fact that there is currently, it's being muted that it should be on site, but there is still the possibility of it not being on site. I appreciate it's not always that black and white with these things, but I have to say I'm nervous about the money leaving site when there should be stuff on there. Interesting enough, that was coming up to one of my other questions, really, with regards to this new junction that's being proposed. Just for clarification, is that a raised junction, or is it literally a roundabout on the A6? I'll leave it at there. I've got a couple more questions, but I'll leave it.
Health facility question first, whilst Nigel gathers his thoughts on that. In terms of the assessing the trigger point for that, it's a balance. The CCG have objected, and they say they want the contributions to go to Montserrat and to Birstall. We clearly don't want that to happen. We want to retain on that. So, you know, we have pushed that back slightly than perhaps we would normally in terms of the trigger, to really try to incentivise the CCG to work with us to help deliver that. And certainly that remains our aspiration, and that remains the aspiration of the developer. So that's our position, and that's where we start. There does have to be a cut-off in that, clearly, because you can't just keep going on and on and on. But we have pushed that back as far as we think is acceptable, so we can have that negotiation with the CEG and bring them around and bring them on site on that. So that picks that point. In terms of adoptions, there will be highway adoptions within the site, and they will be managed by the County Council as part of that adoptions process. There will be other private roads that will fall into that, and footpaths in particular will fall into the management of the trust.
I know you said you had another couple. I've got another speaker, so can you come back all right, I'll bring you back at the end.
Okay, just to pick up your point about the reserve matters, they wouldn't automatically come back to Plans Committee. They'd be subject to the normal call-in procedures. So what we did, if you remember North East Leicester, because it set the tone of the way forward, we did bring that to members. Now, this one, you've got the advantage of setting the tone as part of the hybrid application, but it wouldn't necessarily come automatically back. But obviously there are members that could call it in if that's what they wish to, and it would be subject to the normal calling procedures.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton.
I think I've got the dubious honour of answering the last question. So it's to do with the highways, and I think the question from Councillor Bailey was to do whether it was raised or not. It will be, well, the detail of this is to be signed off by the local highway authority. The picture in front of you might be slightly misleading, because it's essentially the new roundabout on the A6 will be superimposed onto the existing dual carriageway. So that the roundabout that's superimposed on the A6 as is not higher. Yes, so I have got a series of slides I could show if you want, which show the phasing of that, but essentially you build, for want of a better phrase, one half of the donut on one side, the other half of the donut on the other side, and then in the last phase, and there I think there are four phases, is you connect the two halves of the donut the whole time, achieving the four lanes of the A6 must remain open. I think at the very end there are some very short periods over weekends where they need to be closed to finish off the holes in the donut.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton.
Thank you, Chair. I've got a question for officers concerning flood risk and drainage. Now, I'm aware that the local flood authorities looked at it and approved. I'm also aware that it's in flood zone 1, which is low risk, but also that it was stated in reports that disposal by infiltration will not be feasible, so I assume that means surface water just won't drain away, therefore you need this sustainable urban drainage system. So my question is really about Severn Trent's response. Now, they said they were fine with it, subject to conditions. Are we aware that those conditions have been met? Because the response, I thought, from Severn Trent was back in 2016. So have those conditions been met, and has Severn Trent come back to say that they themselves are happy with the conditions being met?
I think it falls to me. Good questions. As it says in the report, the local lead flood authority, Severn Trent and Environment Agency have raised no objections to this, and as you quite rightly point out, it sits within flood zone 1, which is the lowest range. In terms of Severn Trent, the consultee response from them is as reported in the report. There hasn't been a subsequent one. It's not a case of the conditions they suggested that they then have been complied with or discharged. It is attaching the conditions that they, in fact, and the others recommend to be discharged at a later date. So it is then imperative on the applicant and the developer, between them, to make sure, as is the case with all of the conditions, that they build in accordance with the approved plans and the conditions and the obligations. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Thank you. Councillor Bailey, did you want to come back again?
Just one quick question, if I may. The pavilion you said would be used as a sort of an admin office, sales office initially. At what point is that then released to the trust? Hopefully not towards the end of the complete project. I'd rather see it released sooner rather than later.
Another good question. It is a community building, and it will be retained for that purposes. There were two aspects to this from my point of view. The quality of the build, and this will be one of the first buildings that comes along with the two gatehouses north and south of the Northern Boulevard. So you set in the benchmark immediately with the quality and the type of development you wanted. And secondly, as you rightly say, is the community use. That won't affect the external appearance, but it might affect the internal arrangements of that. Yeah, it sits within the broader the partnership plan, bullet 6 or the heads of terms. The actual specifics of when that transfers over, when it changes from an admin duty to the actual sports provision, is not detailed here.
Obviously, that facility is there until the Broadnook Centre, so the Broadnook Hall is delivered in the community centre. So as soon as the Broadnook Hall is delivered, those facilities can move across. Now, is that right? That's not been changed, has it?
That's how I understood it in briefing.
So the backdrop for that being provided, that facility being provided, if I've understood it correctly, and I'm looking to the officer to make sure, is no later than 1,000 houses. But as we've said, we are actually looking at bringing the community centre forward much quicker. So we expect that to be the next reserve matters.
Thank you. No, that's fine. What I didn't want it to do is right at the very end of the project. I have to say I'm very impressed with how much detail has gone in tonight, and I'm very impressed with the fact that they've got bespoke designs, and the design of them, the feel of the whole plan has been thought out thoroughly, and I'd like to support Councillor Grimley's proposal and second the motion.
Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you. Most of my queries have been addressed, but I'm just a bit curious about the gatehouses. Will they be properties that are up for sale, or who will they be occupied by, or will they be up for sale, really?
Yes, my understanding is they'll be for sale under normal market forces.
Thank you. Well, we've had Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just page 64, biodiversity impact assessment. It says, where is it? The land to the east of A46 could be used as a habitat for ground nesting birds. Could we change could to will be? Is that possible?
Chair, if I may, I mean that point can get picked up in the conditions relating to biodiversity. So we'll look at it in that condition. And then just on the point that Councillor Hamilton raised on the drainage, as the committee report, page 93, condition 26, 27, 28, are the surface water drainage conditions that will get picked up for prior to commencement as well.
Right. Thank you very much for spending the time. It's been quite a complicated meeting, a lot for us to take on. I have had the proposal by Councillor Grimley to accept officer's recommendation, subject to conditions, and just to bring up that the question you asked, Councillor Campbell, I think is on page 95, number 32.
Yeah, so the ability for us to control that is in condition 32.
Okay, so I think this is one of the most thorough, detailed, but covered nearly every aspect. So back to what I was saying. Councillor Grimley has proposed officer's recommendation, subject to condition, and it's been seconded by Councillor Bailey. Could I see a show of hands, please?
Yes.
Thank you very much. That's unanimous. I'd like to thank you all very much again, and also for the... I hope everybody's enjoyed listening to it that aren't here. Safe journey home and take care of yourselves. Thank you.